Hello and welcome to This Month in Motorsport November edition, the best month, because it's my birthday month. That's the end of the show, not really. My name's Sean Smith. He's Sam Green.
Yes, I certainly am.
Sam, November. Generally speaking, the sundown area of most motorsports, at least in the Western world.
Yeah, we're wrapping things up now, aren't we, for the year?
It is all finished. Formula One's finished.
Yeah, I'd say pretty much. Indy's finished. Hot Endurance is finished.
Yeah, but Indy finishes just to get out of the way of the NFL.
I'd say that it feels like that finished months ago.
But yeah, we're going to start getting into the months where it's quite difficult for and more. Yeah,
this month in motorsport gets really tricky this time of year.
Yeah, but luckily November is not one of those this time round. For those new to the show, this month for motorsport, we discuss some headline or not headline topics, depending on what month it is. I need my timer. Shit. Right, back in a second. But yes, we discuss it within a fixed time frame. Sam, do you want to introduce the first subject? I'll get the timer.
Yeah, let's see how quickly I can do this before Sean gets back. So, our first topic for this month is the Macau Grand Prix. And the GT World Cup as well, which I can probably cover as well at the same time. So that is the one-off event that happens at the Gaia Circuit in Macau.
The greatest circuit on a street in the world.
It is genuinely, it's like Monaco on steroids. It's insane. It is the only circuit in the world to have a permanent yellow flag. Did you know that?
I didn't know it was the only one, but I did know about the permanent yellow flag.
Yeah, it is the only one with a permanent yellow flag where the hairpin is so tight that modern cars can't overtake through there because they will just crash. So to save that, they have just got rid of the overtaking possibility there.
Yes, which unfortunately is one of them if it was a bit wider.
Yeah, this is it, isn't it? I mean, it's a big braking zone into a tight hairpin, so actually it is quite a good opportunity, but it 9 times out of 10 will end up with both cars probably in the wall.
Yes, yeah, certainly on the imagine the GT cars trying to do it. You can't fit two GT cars out of that corner.
I genuinely don't think it would work, would it? They wouldn't even fit some of those bigger cars. Something like the Bentley. Imagine trying to get a Bentley around Macau. It'd be tricky.
One Bentley trying to get around that corner is quite difficult.
Yeah, let alone two.
When did you first experience or see a Macau either Grand Prix or Grand Prix weekend?
So, I don't know when. I'd not really watched Macau very much. I've known about it since I was fairly little.
Mm-hmm.
Because a driver who I've mentioned lots of times, Oliver Jarvis, who races in World Endurance at the moment for United, when he was racing in British Formula Renault, which shows how long ago it was, in British Formula 3, he was sponsored by the company that my granddad worked for, primarily because my granddad knew his dad really well and managed to get his boss to fund him. And I know that he went and did Macau, and he did quite well. I don't know if he won it, but he did very well. So because of that, I was kind of aware of it. Didn't necessarily realise kind of really what it was till a bit later than that. I just knew it as the Macau Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
It is mad, isn't it? It's absolutely mad.
It's brilliant. It's the most fun. I first saw it in 2000. It would have either been 2000. I think it would have been when Bruno Senna was there in 2007. Oliver Jarvis did win it that year in 2007, funnily enough. Toms.
I was going to say. He would have been racing around that time, to be honest. It was probably when I came across it. There we go then. That kind of... Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just looking at some of the lists and you're seeing some of the great names that went on to stuff. So Marco Asma, I think he was BMW bound by the end. Sam Bird, James Jakes, Yelmer Berman. It goes to go down a little bit. Brendan Hartley, 12th. Still going down. Nico Hülkenberg, 21st. Romain Grosjean. Romain Grosjean, 22nd.
Oh.
Kamui Kobayashi came last. He stalled on the grid, apparently.
Oh.
and Bruno Senna came in 20th, which isn't great, but you know, it's okay. It's only a Macau Grand Prix. It's not a moment.
Only the one off.
It's not one of the only races of your junior career which people will remember and reference.
Yeah. And it is a very prestigious race. We should say that it is a Grand Prix for a reason. Like, it may not be Formula One, but this is a pretty prestigious junior Formula race. They are very, very, they take it very seriously, understandably so, of course. And it is a very, very prestigious race, as we were saying. When you just have to look at the list of winners, really.
Yeah.
Don't you? I mean, you have a look and there's names on there like, Felix Rosenquist.
Yep.
Antonio Felix da Costa, scrolling back, Ollie Jarvis, as we just mentioned. A couple of years before him, Lucas Degrassi, Nicolas Lapierre. Going back a bit further, Ralph Schumacher.
Oh, never mind.
Ralph Furman, Ralph Schumacher.
Ricard
Sato.
Rydell. I didn't know Rydell, won it.
Yeah, 1992. Peter Dumbreck as well, I know that name.
Some German won it in 1990.
Yeah, just Michael Schumacher, just, yeah, whatever happened to him.
No idea.
1983, Ayrton Senna. Going back even further, 78 and 77, Ricardo Patrese won it. Like, there's some big names. And obviously, the further back you get, the less you might recognise. But there's...
Definitely from 1960... The 60s. Yeah, into the 70s, you start to recognise some of the names.
Early 70s, it became more global, I think, didn't it?
Remember also, it wasn't a Formula 3 race until...
No, exactly.
The
80s, it was kind of
Formula Pacific before then, Formula Libre. So single-seaters, they didn't start single-seaters until 1961. Before that, it was sports car race.
Sports cars. Which, again, around that circuit probably does make a bit more sense. The cars weren't as big then either, were they, let's face it. But even then, a DB3S or an XKSS, that's quite a fast car.
That's a very fast car, especially for that track. Well, the 300 SL is relatively big.
Quite a big car. I mean, it's a big race. To win Macau is a big achievement. And any single-seater drivers...
Well, by that metric, of course, the Eduardo Mortara, who's won twice, I think, in the F3 race. He's also won the GT race.
Really? Cool.
Yeah, he's won the Macau Grand Prix 2009, Macau Grand Prix 2010, the Macau GT Cup in 2011, 2012, 2013, and 2017.
Cool. Blimey.
Legend, Eduardo Mortara.
Yeah, clearly. Do you know, though, which nationality has won more Macau Grand Prix than anybody else?
I would guess British, but I don't know.
Yes. 15 wins for the United Kingdom.
Mike Conway won it in 2006.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. There's some big names on there. Even more recently, people like Richard Vershaw is obviously doing pretty big things in Formula 3 and F2 now as well. The last couple of years, there hasn't been an F3 race.
Thank you, pandemic.
It's just been Formula 4. So,
shall we move on to this? This year and... 2019, where they've had the Dallara F3 2019 Mechachrome.
Yes.
Let's just say it divides opinions. With the name, but you know, we can go on with that.
Yeah, I mean, let's just for argument's sake. So this is for F3 cars, though. Please, Sean.
No, it's not an F3 car.
So this runs now the FIA F3 cars, and they are, in my opinion, and I think you agree, Sean, too quick.
Absolutely. They're way too quick.
Way too fast.
Too much power, too much downforce, too much aero wash.
Yeah. It's very difficult to follow in these cars, which makes qualifying more frantic, shall we say. And then because of the way that it works, in at Macau, they have basically practice sessions, and then they have a qualifying session, which sets the grid for the qualifying race, which sets the grid for the main race. So,
so it really matters.
It's a bit different. It really, really matters how well you do in that first quali session, really. I think they do have two opportunities. There is two sessions for qualifying, and then the quali race. But I watched not all of it. I don't think I actually saw qualifying, but I watched the qualifying race.
Yep.
And I watched the main race. And the main thing I would say is that there is a lot of safety car and a lot of red flag.
There is. These cars. Obviously, being a literal city of Macau, the infrastructure isn't there 100% of the time. They do a great job in extracting the cars.
They do a wicked job. I have to say, the marshals are superb. And they've been running it long enough now that they know where crashes are likely to happen, I would say. And they basically have a crane there ready at every corner where there's likely to be a fairly sizable crash. But it's not uncommon, because of the width of the track, for it just to get blocked. And then they just have to red flag it for obvious reasons. That is what it is. That's part of the circuit. That's the charm of Macau, is how difficult it is just to even get to the end of the race, let alone do well.
Lisboa is the famous one.
Yes. Lisboa, that's coming on to...
It's the end of the far straight. So you cross the line, flat out left, flat out right, into the 90 degree.
Main, it's kind of turn one, essentially, the main turn one, because...
It's a first proper turn, yes. If you don't count turn one and two,
zone,
yes.
Yeah.
This is where
Sophia Flersch had a crash, isn't it?
Exactly where Sophia broke her back. Yes. It's a quick mention to Sophia. She did absolutely fantastically well this year.
She did a wicked job. Where was she in the end? She was P9 or P10.
She was racing in ninth. I think she came 11th.
11th place overall. But she moved forwards, I think. I think she was 12th on the grid. So 12th or 13th on the 15th, grid. And 15th she beat in Dan qualifying.
Where is she? 11th in race one, in the main race. So yeah, she did good. And Dan Tickham had a terrible race, and that's a shame. Never mind. But yes, the problem I think just was apparent is that Luke Browning, who won the qualifying and the main race, just disappeared. No one was able to touch him. Always.
He did such a wicked job.
He did do a great job.
Drove really well, because there's a lot of pressure as well because of the kind of race that it is. And Luke Browning is not a particularly... he has done F3, FIA F3, but he's only done one season. He's still quite new in that car. He's only really fairly recently moved up from kind of F4 and GB3 and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So to go in and I think it was his first appearance at Macau and to win, that's pretty impressive.
It was a good field this year, because you know, you had Dennis Hauger,
was strong.
Who's of course a front runner in Formula 2, Paul Aaron, who's been around F3 level machinery for ages. We've already mentioned Sophia Flersch and Marcus Armstrong was there. He's been around in F3 for years.
Richard Vershaw won the last time the F3 raced at Macau, and he's been in Formula 2 this year.
Tickton's won twice.
Yeah. I mean, even lower down, Dino Beganovic, he's going into Formula 2 next year. Gabriele Mini is in F2, or will be next year. Pepe Marti, another F3, FIA F3 race car, like race driver. Hajar, I'm pretty sure he's F2 as well, isn't he?
I think so.
Because he actually had his F1 test at Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
I'm fairly sure.
Yeah, it's a big field. He did a great job. But the fact is,
cars
are too bloody quick.
really fast.
We're going to extend this session just because the F4 race that happened the week before, F4 cars now are as quick as the F3 cars were 10 years ago. You know, the proper F3 cars. Now, there were red flags, there were safety cars. The race was slightly ruined at the end. by that. But would you say the F4 race was a better spectacle, a better race?
I'll be honest, I've actually not seen it.
Oh, come on, Sam. You're better than that. Well, okay, so but you must have seen the F4
cars. I've seen bits and pieces of it, and yeah, I think they're generally, the cars are smaller, they're not as quick, they haven't got the DRS.
They haven't got...
It's not that,
it's just the fact that they can follow each other.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. There's less aero, isn't there? So they actually... They're just generally a bit better. I think it just works better, doesn't it?
Do you think the F4 machine... Well, because obviously with the COVID pandemic, they've been racing Formula 4 as the Macau Grand Prix for the last few years. I think there's a pretty solid argument to say that that should be the car for the track.
Well, I think you're probably right. I think they're probably avoiding doing it, if that makes sense. I think they're trying to avoid it purely because what they don't want to do is the F3 grid is still quite strong and it's a bit more prestigious. There's a lot of drivers that will do Formula 4 and they won't actually get to F1.
This car, just reference, this car is 8 seconds a lap faster than the old Dallara F312s.
Oh, so what, the current F3s, you mean?
No, the last ones. The ones, that's a good question. Let's go to 2017. 2:10. Okay, so they're only a couple of seconds faster, but it's the way that they get around the track, I suppose.
Well, I mean, so in... qualifying main race 2:06. Okay, I've got as the fastest lap.
Main race
done by Luke Browning.
Main race fastest lap 2:12 from Mick Schumacher in 2017.
Okay, so that's 6 seconds a lap quicker. That's a lot, especially around. It's a long circuit. Don't get me wrong, but that is a lot of time.
Hmm.
I think these cars are just a bit quick, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
For that. I mean. It's good to see, and when you watch the onboards, you realise actually quite how, firstly, how mad, but also how impressive it is for some of these guys that are driving them to actually just even survive this race, let alone place well. Just to get to the checkered flag is a pretty good achievement, and actually there wasn't that many retirements, I don't think, in the main race. No. Was there? It was what?
A couple of crashes, and that's it.
6 or 7. So it wasn't terrible. But there was one, I think it was Paul Aaron, actually, was running really, really well, and then managed to break the car basically in two. But yeah, I don't know. We will see.
We'll see, indeed. Let's move on to stock number two.
Yes. Yeah.
The far more boring street circuit, apart from in practice. Formula One. They've finally got their triple American race with a track that looks like a pig that's been killed and is on its back.
I'd say, if you remember back to your childhood days, Sean, of the Simpsons movie, it reminds me of Spider Pig.
Childhood? I was like 15 when that came out.
But you are old.
Okay.
It reminds me of Spider Pig because it does whatever a spider pig does. I was pretty skeptical about this coming into it. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know what you were expecting from a circuit in Las Vegas, but when I saw it, I looked at the track map and was like, well, that doesn't look that impressive. And then I thought, actually, you know what? We saw it at Miami last year. This is basically just going to be terrible. Well, like, it's just going to be all show and no go.
Yeah.
Well, and actually, I was pleasantly surprised, I have to say. The race wasn't terrible.
The race was okay. It wasn't a classic. It's not, you know, as some commentators might overblow things. You know, the spectacle, the biggest spectacle in motorsport sort of thing. It wasn't great. It was fine. You know, it was helped by safety cars and yellow flags and stuff.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the practice thing first. So in practice one, Carlos Sainz decided to break the track that was brand new by ripping out a manhole cover. He did a good job, though, because he managed to also break his Ferrari and Esteban Ocon's Alpine.
I think Ocon went over it first, didn't he?
Yeah. It's obviously Carlos Sainz's fault, so it's fine. So they broke both of their cars. The track got broken. We had hours of delays. Now, I think this is the biggest sticking point of this race is, you know, the way the organisers treated this delay.
Yeah, this I wasn't very impressed by this. And this is where essentially they had to delay the race to fix the problem with the drain. And then they wanted to check the rest of the drains, which is understandable. I can understand why they wanted to do that from a driver's safety point of view. That makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
However, because of when this thing was scheduled to be, so practice two was due to start at midnight and was delayed by 2.5 hours. Now, it was also extended, which is understandable because we lost a lot of time in practice one.
Well, they got
red flags,
7 minutes, didn't they? They got 7 minutes in practice one.
Yeah. But they also, in that delay, they shut the grandstands and all the fans had to go home.
Well, they didn't have to go. They were forced by
law
enforcement.
They were told they had to be, 1:30. They were all kicked out.
Awful.
And the session started at 2 o'clock. Now, that is not good. It's definitely not good.
Especially considering the prices that they've been scalping for these things.
Oh, it's been horrific. I mean, this has been the most expensive Grand Prix of the year by far. By far. And let's face it, F1 is never cheap.
No.
Some of the packages that I saw were like over $10,000, which is insane.
I think a general ticket was at least $1,000. It was eye-watering expensive. You know, Miami got stick a couple of years ago when that came on the grid, and it was, you know, it was expensive. But this was magnitudes
different
more.
Level.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the fans that were kicked out after seeing 7 minutes of track time.
Yep.
Were given a $200 voucher.
What a voucher for what?
It's merchandise. Not even to buy another ticket. They have to use that
laugh.
Merchandise.
Wow.
The in-circuit store. So $200 they were given, basically.
Well, the in-circuit store they can't go and see because
which they
kicked
can't
out
go
the track.
To because yeah, exactly. So it was pointless, basically. Now I completely can understand why they had to delay that session because it was a safety thing. That's totally fair enough. But you can't kick the. That's not the fans' fault.
No, it's a private. Well, I suppose when the track is closed, it's technically a private residence.
Yeah,
the reason
that they apparently why it had to be shut was that basically the people running the event, like the security and stuff like that, they were only scheduled to be there until 1:30.
Right. Okay. What else are they doing with the rest of the night?
I'd say, in my opinion, they should have just been told, right, you were doing some overtime tonight because we're not finished.
It's not, yeah, well, obviously, F1 couldn't possibly stretch a budget, could they? Seeing as it's...
Exactly, that's what I mean. Or the promoter, God forbid the promoter has to fork out slightly more to the staff that are running the event.
You're aware that Formula One are the promoters of this track?
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's a Formula One organised event. It's not a third-party one like Silverstone or Monza or anything like that.
Oh, well, then in that case, yeah, it's entirely on F1 then, let's face it. As the promoter, they should be doing better for the fans. There's no excuse for it, really. Really isn't an excuse. And I would have been, I think, Max Verstappen, quite often is quite dry and a bit boring in his interviews, but he said he would have torn the place down if that was the place. It's like, okay, maybe a bit of a reaction.
He probably would have done as well, but...
probably. I mean, he's Dutch. We've seen them at Le Mans, and they do go a bit mad. But,
yeah, but they're so much fun, though.
They are great. Would not change them, especially at Le Mans. They're brilliant.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just... was not. It wasn't a good look. Let's face it. Let's just say from that, it really wasn't a good look.
Having an empty grandstand at your Las Vegas race in your own
Like the most prestigious race, and it was totally empty.
Yeah,
genuinely.
I think especially with the ticket scalping. Yeah. It wasn't even scalping. It was just the price.
No, that was the price. That was the list price. It wasn't even like they were being resold at a massive gain. They were just too expensive. And they actually dropped a load of the prices a few weeks before because they really hadn't sold many.
Hmm.
A lot of the hotels did the same. They slashed the prices because they still had loads and loads of empty rooms.
Should we talk about the race itself?
Yeah. So let's move on. The qualifying was neither here nor there. It was fairly uneventful. McLaren didn't do particularly well in quali, which is a bit concerning considering they've done quite well recently, generally. We had a Ferrari all Ferrari front row at the end of qualifying, sort of. And then obviously science then had to move down. But what did you actually think of the race itself?
I lost interest once Pierre Gasly's Alpine started breaking, but just because that's just my state of F1 at the minute, it's a bit dull. But no, it was nice to see Leclerc try and fight Verstappen early on.
Yes. And actually be able to do something about the Red Bull.
Yeah. Beyond that, you know, it's a track that's been designed to have a bloody massive straight, which, you know, anything will be able to overtake on.
It's huge. It's a very, very far. It's like it's almost a bit like Baku, isn't it?
Yeah, where the difference is I like Baku. That's quite fun.
Yeah.
This one,
I think the top speed was something like 205 mile an hour.
It was fast.
Oh, the street circuit. That's insane. It's so fast.
The thing is, Baku's got some scenery. You know, you go through the castle section, you go through the fast bits, you go through the long left-hander before you come back up the hill. This one was just kind of meh. You know, it was just...
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that.
Same as that stupid... Is it Saudi Arabia you go to?
Yes, yeah.
That's the most boring track. For the TV cameras, it's the most boring track in the world. Because
you know what? I think I know what the problem is for this. Vegas has caught the same problem as, like you said, what Jeddah is, where everyone was expecting like the neon of the strip and everything to look really cool on the cameras, but you can't see it. And the reason for that is the floodlights are so bright all the way around the circuit that the cameras have to have the aperture and the exposure set just so.
It's not just that.
And because of that, anything that isn't on the circuit is so dark you can't see it.
It's better than that because they've also got the banners and you know, basically what they've done is to stop anyone who didn't have a ticket from getting in and seeing anything, they've put scaffolding and banners and basically blackout boards all the way along the track, so you can't see the lights anyway. So it just looks like it looks awful.
Yeah, it's not a good one. Really not a very good one. But the race was passable.
Max Verstappen won it.
Max Verstappen won by 2 seconds. So
Perez lost his
biggest. Yeah. Perez. That's probably a good way of looking at it, to be totally honest, because Perez could have had a better... He finished third, but he could have been second.
The rest of the field was pretty much as you expected.
Good result for Ocon.
Well,
and actually, good result for Stroll, weirdly. P5 for Lance Stroll.
Well, yeah, he's got to have a result sometimes, hasn't he?
Yeah, true, very true.
Was that his best result of the season? Did he get a podium? I don't know if he did he?
I don't think he's had a podium this year. This could well be his best result this year. I've not looked it up.
Oh, no, he got a fourth place in Australia.
Okay. So, yeah.
So, there you go. Lance Stroll.
Lance Stroll finished strong and everything in between, the lesser the better.
Exactly. Right. Let's move on to topic number 3.
Yes.
Now, spoiler to everyone. Anyone who's listened to our podcast in the past or read my articles will know there might be a hint of bias to some of these comments. However, we're going to, for this episode, try and keep it as neutral as possible. I say we. Sam,
try.
Well, you tend to do quite a good job. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the World Endurance Championship.
Yes.
So, good news. The last race happened. It was really good.
Yeah, again, I've actually not seen the full race because it's an 8 hour. It took a bit more time than usual.
Yeah,
but,
I dedicated my entire day to watch it.
Yeah, that's the trouble. I've watched bits and pieces. I've seen some highlights and some onboards and stuff. And it was a good race. It was pretty close.
It was a bit ruined at the start because one of the Toyotas got steamrolling into turn one.
Yeah.
But behind that, it was a really good race.
And the hypercars are always cool, aren't they? Let's face it. We said this earlier in the year. It's great to see a lot of them, and there'll be even more yet next year, which is good.
We'll get to that.
We'll get onto that though. I think it was a pretty good race. It was at the Bahrain International Circuit. It was a night race, and it was an extra long 8 hour. Mm-hmm. It's the only 8 hour of the calendar. Qualifying. The number 8 car, Toyota, on pole. Number 7 Toyota in second. Cadillac were third.
Unfortunately.
So not a bad result.
I'm not doing very well at being neutral. Right, sorry. Carry on. We haven't even got to the bad bit yet.
No, we haven't. But you'll be glad to know, Sean, that Bicolo's van wall did manage to out qualify all of the LMP2 cars. Yeah, so that's good.
Yeah, that was a silver lining. They also got steamrolled at turn one on the first lap, but that's not the point.
Yes,
the race itself. I mean, again, you had to sort of ignore the lead car and really the second car once it got back to the front. AF Corsa and Porsche and so almost for a little while Peugeot, but then not for very long. They had a great fight. There's a joke over the years in WC that Porsche and Ferrari, when they're in the GT class, they'd always be a title decider, and one of them would always hit the other one, so they won the championship.
The last 3 years in GCE, didn't it?
Yeah, and it was a rolling thing. It's like, oh, when are they going to hit each other? But this year they tried very hard not to, and still
yes, because the cars are more expensive now and they can't afford that.
Well, instead, I don't know if you saw this highlight, Sam, but the two Ferraris almost killed each other.
Oh yes, yeah. It wasn't the best moment for them, that one, but the number 50 car of the AF Corsa Ferraris did manage third, beating the Jota Porsche by about a second,
yeah.
I think. So really not far between them after 8 hours.
Al was right, I think, about Jota.
Yeah, I think they're going to be... Next year, they've got two hypercars, and I think they're going to be pushing Penske for top Porsche team, certainly.
Two hypercars, you say? Let's not talk about that yet. Yes. Yeah. Anyway. but yes, the two Ferraris, the Penske Porsche, and also the Jota Porsche were all together having a nice big fight. The Peugeots ended up sort of in the middle of nowhere, like they have done for most of the session. But they are going to be at least testing... having a wing next year, which would be interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Radical concept, I know, but the Cadillac sort of fell into obscurity after its first lap crash and probably some penalties, I imagine. But Bicolos were running well and then decided not to for the last hour. They obviously didn't get the memo. It was an 8 hour race. Behind them, the MP2 class was pretty close all the way through it. WRT got a 1-2 in the end. Jota, Prima, Inter Europol, and Alpine were actually doing well to start with.
United, I don't know what happened to them. They kind of dropped the ball a bit.
I think they got a penalty.
Strong, haven't they? Oh, did they?
I think they did, yeah. But no, all the teams in NMP2. Last time, of course, we'll ever see those cars, thankfully.
Certainly the World Endurance Championship, anyway.
Yes. If you want to go see them, go and watch the LMS, which I'm sure some people do. But that's now going to be replaced by hypercars for next year. Then the big one in the GT Am, we finally got justice.
Yeah, finally the Iron Dames managed to win a race. Is it the most deserving win of the year?
Oh, by a mile. I think so.
They've been so quick all season and have had absolutely no luck at all. I mean, we saw it at Monza when we went, Sean. They were rapid and they just drove away from everybody, and then a safety car would come out.
Yeah, and they lost and then more than their advantage. Every single safety car, every yellow flag, every crash, every single anything on track would go against them.
In front of them and ruined their pace. But they were so quick. They did really, really, really solid job here.
They did a bloody good job as well.
All season.
There was question marks in this race because their teammates, the Iron Lynx, their AM driver, basically the team owner, wasn't very well. And there was sort of 50-50 on whether or not they would be able to finish the race, because obviously you have to run all three drivers.
Yes.
So the two pros went flying off into the distance, overtook their teammates sort of in a choreographed last corner thing. And we were sort of going, okay, you've got 3 hours left, or you've got 2.5 hours left, you're going to have to put them in soon, you've got 2 hours left. And finally, they did do the right thing and just come into the pits and retire the car, amicably. But that then left Iron Dames out front with the Aston of, I've forgotten which one it was.
D-Station,
yes, 777.
Yes, the 777, go on, lads.
Yeah, you would, that's the thing, I was thinking about it, it's like, we're going to have mixed emotions here, because we all wanted the Iron Dames to win because they deserve to win, but also we all like Aston Martin.
Yeah, especially, really, and I was so disappointed in Monza. I was so disappointed when the 777 got binned off on like the full flap or whatever it was by Buemi. mate, I love that car. It's so cool, and it's my race number, and it's a bright green Aston Martin. It's great.
Yeah, it's your wallpaper, isn't it?
The 499P is my wallpaper.
Oh, you changed it?
I have, yes. Okay. but no, Iron Dames, what a job. All season, they've been superb.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that they aren't in the hypercars next year, as we'll come on to in a bit. But I'd like to think that certainly a couple of their drivers might be, hopefully.
Well, yes. Behind them, it was kind of... Again, it was a pretty close the last GTE race we'll ever see. They're gone now. The champions at Corvette, they came home in like fifth, sixth, something like that. Pretty much nowhere. But they'd already done the job. It was just a bit of fun for them. Shall we move on to this week's news about the 2024 entry list?
We certainly can.
Now,
yes.
Brief, Sean. Right. I'm very happy that Isotta have got a place.
Yes. So am I. We saw their car at Monza, and it does look like it could be quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. We don't actually know yet. That was untested.
Yes. I didn't know that the entry list was coming out yet. Because until we got news in the morning that Isotta and
Iron Lynx?
No. Number 10. What's the number 10 car? Vector. Vector Sport. They've parted ways with Isotta.
Right.
And Isotta instead are being run by the French team. I'm stalling for time here. Who are they called?
I didn't see this, so I don't know.
This was early in the morning. But anyway, basically, they've changed which team is running them. And they, as a result, that's all much from much. But I was like, oh, that means the entry list coming out later today. So we waited until about, I don't know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it was afternoon.
And it came out. Yeah, it's got the big headlines saying... Was it 19, a lot of manufacturers? Hang on.
19 cars, I think, yeah.
14 manufacturers, which is great. We'll start with GT. So GT, of course, has the big change going to GT3. You get two cars per brand. So two Porsches, two, in this case, Ferraris, Aston Martins.
They don't have to be run by the same team. They can be different teams.
Yes. I think in most cases they have got the same.
Generally, I think you're right. I think Lamborghini are different. Porsche and Aston Martin are different.
Yeah. But it's good. It's you know, 9 marks in GT. That's going to be a bit, well, you've got new marks coming like McLaren, which is good.
Yeah.
We've been saying for years, and Lexus, they've obviously raced in Daytona.
Yeah.
The new Ford Mustang coming in. You know, GT is going to be great. And for those who like GT racing, good for you. You're going to have a good time enjoying that series. You know, 18 cars, it's great. You know, considering GT Pro was a couple of years ago, they had 4 cars in it.
Yeah. Let's have a quick run through some of those teams that are returning, shall we? So we've got, obviously, we have the D-Station Aston Martin still, and at that 777, that will be there in GT3 form now. AF Corsa have got both of the Ferrari entries. United Autosports.
I'm a little bit surprised that AF Corsa have managed to get the 2 GT spots. I thought they might go to a second Ferrari customer. But
I mean, considering, we'll get onto the hypercars in a minute, but considering they are running the hypercars as well.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit surprised that Ferrari didn't choose to expand their customer base a bit.
Yeah. But United have got both of the McLarens. TF Sport, now they have run Aston Martin.
Yes,
basically
famously.
Up until now. They are now going to be running the Corvettes, both of the Corvettes, which presumably one of those will be being driven by Ben Keating.
Yeah.
So Manti have got both the Porsche entries, but different branches of Manti. Then who else have we got? Iron Lynx and Iron Dames are the Aston Martin, Lamborghini, sorry. And then we've got WRT as well, who have been in LMP2 the last couple of years, and they've got the M4 GT3, which is a pretty strong car. I'd expect them to do well next year. They've been running that in various other things, like GT World Challenge for the last few years. So I think they will be pretty quick straight off the bat, as I would expect AF Corsa to be as well, and Manti.
Any other cars which have at least a year's racing under them, I'd expect them to be pretty much up to speed straight away.
Yeah, exactly. There's a few of these teams that have been running prototypes that are now going to run a GT car, so that might take a bit more time. But really, D-Station, they've been running that GT3 in a Super Taiku. Is that the series? Japanese GT. So they know that car. It's just going to be fine. United, I don't think they've necessarily run...
I think they have in British GT. That's something telling me. I can't remember, but I've definitely seen a McLaren in United cars before.
Maybe. They might have done a few races here or there, but I don't think they've... I think they've been focusing more on the prototypes.
I think Lamborghini... the Lexus is an old car now, but I think the Toyota... Because they've got their entry from Toyota. And we all know that Toyota are developing something.
A new car, yeah. So I'd expect that to maybe come in 2025, the year after.
Whether that's a Lexus or a Toyota, we don't know. But I'd be quite happy if it's a Lexus.
Iron Dames, they could win it next year, potentially.
They could.
I mean, that car, the Huracan, is a pretty strong car. And also, they have been running that car in IMSA.
Okay.
So they know the car. They were on pole at Petit Le Mans. So
the biggest question mark is obviously Ford.
Yeah, to a completely brand new car, and Proton have been running prototypes. So, and before that, they were running Porsches in GT3, GTE even. So, completely unknown, to be totally honest.
Yeah, definitely.
We will see.
Okay, let's move on.
It's a strong grid of GTs, but moving on to the premier class, the hypercars. Now, we've got an extra Ferrari. We have the number 83 AF Corsa 499P, which we've only got one driver announced for yet, but it's Robert Kubica.
Yes.
Now, he's done a bit of LMP2 and was reasonably good at that. He nearly won Le Mans a couple of years ago, I think, didn't he, with WRT?
I've only just now seen the way they've named it, the Ferraris. They've got Ferrari AF Corsa and AF Corsa. That's the most tenuous way to get around the rules that it must be a separate team.
I would imagine that third car will be like a customer livery. I don't imagine it will be that red and yellow that we saw this year.
That's even worse than Audi Sport North America they used to run. That was stupid. Right.
And we have also seen, don't forget, we've seen this new 499 Modificato,
yes,
which has been announced recently, which is their new kind of customer track day only hypercar, which is basically a cheap way to go testing.
I'm a little bit surprised that Toyota didn't take the number one. I sort of wish they did.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but they haven't done the last few years either, have they?
They haven't
with the 7 and 8. It's not that surprising.
Not since TSO 40, I think, they last ran the number one. I think they lost that year afterwards, so they didn't bother after that.
maybe that's why they don't, because every time they run the number one, they lose it.
Toyota
will be strong, let's face it, we know that.
Only one Cadillac.
Yes, but we've only had one Cadillac for most of this year.
I imagine they're doing the same thing again, where they've got two or three in IMSA.
I think this is the spare one.
Yeah,
basically, yeah. And they may well have an extra one at Le Mans, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do get a few of the IMSA teams come over for that. Yep. Porsche, with two Porsches.
Mm.
This year, and then we also have,
remember guys, count them, two. Yep, that's two Porsches so far. Yep,
two Porsches. So one Cadillac, two Porsches, two Toyotas.
Yep.
Three Ferraris, two Peugeots, two Alpines, the new car.
Yes.
Then we have two BMWs.
Mm-hmm.
New car as well. Just one Lamborghini, I think, isn't it?
Yep. That Iron Lynx.
Yeah. That's being run by Iron Lynx.
And then we have... How many customer Porsches are there?
There is Proton.
Yeah.
The number 99. And then on the list that we have here, there is only one Hertz Team Jota. But Jota have definitely confirmed.
No, there's two. Number 12 and number
38. Oh, okay. There we go. That's why I couldn't see them. They're running non-consecutive numbers. Okay, so there is two on the list then.
Anyone who did primary school maths, how many Porsches is that?
That makes that five Porsches.
Five Porsches. Okay. So if they got space for five Porsches, that must mean they got plenty of space for privateers as well, right? Yeah. They got one car. That's cool. Yeah, little effort. Glickenhaus have gone, so that's two spaces open. Anyway, moving on. There's
one notable disappearance aside from Glickenhaus, which obviously, as some of you may be able to tell, is why Sean is a bit is trying to bite his tongue slightly at the minute, because the Bicolors Run Van Wall is not on this list.
And more details of that will be coming in the article in the next week or two.
Yeah.
Let's move on from Bicolors. I think this is a brilliant grid for the hypercars.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And it's great to see the top class so healthy again after what it has been towards the end of, or the beginning of hypercar, should we say, and the end of LMP1, where it was really struggling. To be totally honest, that top class was, well, for a long time, just Toyota, really.
Well, I think how much... It was Toyota with their hands held back behind them.
Yeah, yeah. Alpine, kind of there by proxy.
Well, they just took over Rebellion's old car.
Yeah, just bought an old car. And bike holes.
Yes.
We're always there,
Do you think that Toyota will be closer... We'll be brought back in a bit next year by the other cars.
They've only got
two cars.
They have only got two, and they have said
not five.
They're only going to run two. I would like to think that certainly Ferrari will be pretty close to them, with at least the 50 and the 51. This 83, unknown quantity.
Mm-hmm.
The AA, of course, are running it. They've been running the two cars this year. Should be absolutely fine.
It's effectively going to be a third works car, the same way that the old Peugeot, was it? The Orica run Mammoth car.
Yes. yeah, I think it's going to be a different livery, and that'll be it, really. It'll be the same.
I would like to see Peugeot, but speaking of them, actually, I'd like to see them get closer.
Yes, I'd like to think they will be, because they should be, really. Of the cars on this grid, let's face it, the Peugeot is the second oldest now, after the
GR. That's a four. Yeah, you're right.
The GR010, and then it's the 9X8, isn't it? The Peugeot.
Mm-hmm. All the others are this year.
Others are 2024, or they have 1 year in 2023. Some of these cars obviously raced last year in IMSA. The BMW raced last year in IMSA, but didn't come over. There's a few brand new ones as well, the Alpine and the Lamborghini.
The Alpine, Alpine's very close in DNA to the Acura, though.
Very, very close. When you look at it, it's very similar, isn't it?
It was quite funny when we went to Monza and we saw the cars in the tent, and if you didn't put an Alpine badge on that car, you'd think it's a Takura.
Yeah, 100%. When I said this, when it came out, the first thing I said when I saw pictures of the Alpine is, that reminds me of the Acura.
Yeah. it is.
Yeah, it does look very, very similar, but it is a different car, apparently.
The engine is.
It's not. The engine is different, so yeah, but it's that sort of LMVH style where it's essentially just different bodywork and engine.
Well, lightly different bodywork.
Very, very lightly. I think it seems as though most of Alpine's design budget went into the tail lights. Which are quite cool. I have to give them credit for that. They're the Alpine A.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool.
I'm trying to remember. The BMW and the... There's one other car which has the same chassis, but they look completely different. I forgot which one it is.
Cadillac.
The Caddy, yeah. They look completely different.
Yeah, they do, yeah. But... Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
Yes.
We'll see. I would expect Toyota still to be winning. But I'd like to think that... Certainly Ferrari will be closer and might take a few more wins off of them next year. And I'd like to see Peugeot doing better as well, because they've been a bit up and down this year, really, haven't they? They weren't bad at Monza in part.
No, but then they're also good in the wet.
Yes, yeah. In the wet at Le Mans, they were very quick, weren't they?
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting. Hopefully, let's just say... Without getting into deals again, let's just hope there's more guest entries at Le Mans next year.
Yeah, I hope there's at least a few more, because they're going to have LMP2 at Le Mans, I think, aren't they?
So that'll be 10 cars.
So that'll be another 10.
Then you've got five or six spaces left.
Yeah, and I don't imagine there might be a handful more GT3s they'll allow in. But I'd like to think that those spots will go to... the hypercar teams coming over from IMSA, or those who deserve it. Let's phrase it like that.
Yes. That's going to do it for this one for Motorsport. Slightly longer edition due to a bit of, to be honest, just exciting subjects more than anything else.
Yeah.
So, yes, thank you for listening. We'll be back next month in December, where we'll think of something to talk about.
Yep. On awards, the awards.
Oh, yes, the awards. As well. That's going to be good fun.
I'll dig out my tuxedo.
Yes. Get my tiara. Wait, what?
Yep.
We'll see you next time. Take care and goodbye.
Goodbye.